Okay, our next speaker is Sherry Labatis. I hope I'm pronouncing.
During the summer of 1965, I was a... Oh, is that better? Thank you. During the summer of 1965, I was a 125-pound natural blonde, 18 years old, and I was absolutely committed to equality. I was a voter registration worker for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. My project was SCOPE, or Summer Community Organization and Political Education Project. My story is from my book, I Came Here to Die, Didn't You? Excuse me, You Came Here to Die, Didn't You? Some of the people in this story I'm going to tell you are still friends because they changed my life, and I won't let them go. Fireball in the Night, Friday, August 20th, Pineville, South Carolina. I need to pee, but I can't walk down the outside stairs to the toilet. I'm scared. In the loft of the Freedom House, past midnight, soaked in sweat, our sheets thrown aside, Nellie, Carol, and I pray for relief. Relief from the fatigue, from the heat, and from the constant nagging fear that drains our energy. Our bodies crave sleep. Can't. I can't. I'm frightened to death listening for the sinister crunch of tires in front of the Freedom House, the crash of a Molotov cocktail smashing the storefront window, setting the building afire with me in it. The past 2 months here have taken their toll on me, on all of us. For Herb and Henry, who lived there, that toll has been lifelong. I need to pee, but night frightens me the most. Secrets happen in the dark. We can't escape in deep slumber, but occasionally there might be the tattered dream of home or the face of a boyfriend or memories of sleeping in. Not tonight. A legion of mosquitoes plagues us, whining in the oppressive darkness, and when they land, a smack follows. I feel like the whole world is about to explode. Something waits in the night. I know it as I drift off. Fire! A male voice yells from below. I jump up to look out the window, expecting the male workers' rooms to be engulfed in flame. But a dull red glow highlights the horizon across the street, accentuating the silhouettes of loblolly and yellow pine. It's not here, I cry. It looks like it's over near Redeemer, though. Scrambling for our clothes in the dark, we fly barefoot down the stairs. Mrs. Simmons waits next to her car. Her black face is fierce in Herb's headlights as he, Carol, and Henry peel out of the parking lot, spitting gravel against us. Nellie and I jump into Mrs. Simmons' car, and she races after Herb toward the ominous glow. John stays home next to the phone. My voice quivers when I ask, could it be Redeemer? Mrs. Simmons worships at Redeemer, and we consider it our home church. Do you think it's the Klan? I exclaim. You just hush now. You hear? Mrs. Simmons hisses both anger and resignation in her voice. It's our fault. If we weren't here, there wouldn't be a fire. And then I look at Mrs. Simmons, her jaw set, her lips tied, and I wonder, is she thinking the same thing? Or does she feel responsible? I don't have the guts to ask her, so I never find out. We round the bend, and blazing Redeemer fills our view. Lord have mercy, Mrs. Simmons whispers. She steers the car on the grassy shoulder and stops behind her. We are so sorry, Nellie breathes, and we are. Redeemer has been the base of our voter registration drive. Reverend Gadsden and many of the congregation support white civil rights workers in their midst. On registration day, folks meet here to catch the buses to go to the county seat. The church, surrounded by cotton fields, on an old road, it's too much of a target for those who would rid the community of outside agitators, us. We leave the car only to shrink back from the heat. Is that a fire truck? Carol asks, in disbelief as a truck passes us and pulls up to two houses on the right side of the church. It belongs to Robert Bobbitt, Herb says. He owns the cotton gin near Daydon Church. He's white. But he wanted a local fire department as long as I can remember. The St. Stephen Fire Department is at least 10 minutes away, so he has his own truck. Bobbitt runs out the hose, and Henry and other neighbors hurry to help him. Even though there's no hope for the church, the houses might be saved. How'd it start? Nellie asked. Firebomb. Herb angrily picks up a handful of sand and hurls it against the air. White guys in a pickup truck. A pine tree explodes in a shower of spray. Shower of sparks as flames reach its branches. Fesco's char. And suddenly, the second story of Redeemer collapses with a horrifying whoosh and a thud. Miss Simmons shudders. Why'd it burn so fast, I ask. It's brick. It's veneer, she says simply. It was built in 1911. Oh, my God. We're not playing, I realize, as we stare hypnotized while the flames die down and the fire is reduced to hot coals.